Honestly Unbalanced.
It's episode 130 of Honestly Unbalanced, and we're chatting to Anthony Mullally. From international rugby player to breathwork and resilience coach, he's walked the path from brute force to grounded strength. In this raw and timely conversation, Anthony shares how his journey through elite sport and the identity crisis that followed led him to question traditional ideas of masculinity and purpose. Now a senior instructor for Deep Team Fitness, he helps others push past their perceived limit through a unique blend of breathwork, functional fitness, and aquatic-based stress training. But his main mission goes a little bit deeper. He's working to refine what it means to be a man today. We talk about the shame that men feel about vulnerability, the outdated idea that rest is weakness, the urgent need for male role models who embody compassion, strength, and self-awareness. Anthony also offers a retreat, so kind of an antidote to alpha male noise, creating spaces where men can show up, breathe, reflect, grow. No ego, no warrior chanting, just real connection, real work, and real transformation. We talk about so much here, not just for men. We talk about shame, vulnerability, societal conditioning, transitioning from sports to a more wellness-based career, how breathwork can be used in pool-based training, and so much more. Before we crack on with the episode, I want to give a little shout out to Vivo Barefoot. I wear them, my family wear them, and I think Anthony wear them, or at least in most of the videos I've seen him in, Anthony's wearing Vivo Barefoot shoes. To be honest, I spend most of my life either barefoot or as close to it as possible, and Vivo Barefoot lets me do that wherever I am, whether I'm walking through the woods, lifting weights in my gym, chasing kids around the garden. Vivos are always on. They're minimalist, they're sustainable, they're massively comfortable. Kind of, they're more than shoes. They're a philosophy on how you want to connect with the world. And, you know, bear in mind, feet are the main way of interacting physically with the world around you. So shout out to Vivo Barefoot. Code HUSLER20, Hustler20, will get you 20% off. And if you want a grounded surface when you're practicing yoga, I don't recommend wearing shoes at all. I recommend you flowing through asana or meditating on a Lifeform yoga mat. They're just the best. They're an amazing company. Their products are super sustainable, incredible grip, really useful alignment markers. They're awesome. And code HUSTLER10 will get you 10% off any Lifeform mat. They do have awesome sales on all the time, and HUSTLER10 will still get you a discount even if there is a sale on. It might not get you 10%, but it's going to get you a discount. And if any yoga teachers are listening, my Level Up program, Cohort 5, is now open for application. It's a 6-month program, part mentoring, part education. We cover everything that will help you become a better teacher, living a life that is supported by your unique why. So check out my website if you're interested in that. There is currently a 10% discount for anyone that listens to the podcast. You just have to mention it at the end of the application form, and I will give you that 10%.
Honestly,
let's start kind of in the deep end, okay? Not literally. I know deep end is actually something you're doing separately. So not deep end the organization.
Metaphoric
deep end. Of why do men typically not want to get involved with anything to do like with their mental health, with their self-development, etc.? Like, you know, and what I'm saying there is a sweeping generalization, but I was actually listening to something by the Oxygen Advantage guy, Patrick McCone, yesterday, and he was saying back in the day, he used to do these courses for anxiety, and like he worked like 3,000 people on these courses. But because anxiety was in the title, there was never any men. Men just didn't get involved. Not one man in all that time wanted to be on the course. So what is it about men not wanting to get involved in stuff that would actually help them?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I've heard that story with Patrick McKeown. He changed the title, didn't he? To get more men.
That's why he created Oxygen Advantage, I think.
Exactly. So I think what comes up when you ask that is, comes up initially is the word like weakness. And why I say that is I feel like we associate as men any sort of kind of not being okay, any sort of not being the kind of like strong, dependable one, if there's anything like teetering away from that kind of metronome, is vulnerability, and I feel like we associate vulnerability with weakness. So like it's just an unconscious thing, and I think research shows that the biggest driver in shame in men is feeling weak. So if we feel weak, we feel shame, we feel shameful. So it's like this knock-on effect. So okay, if anything, that kind of knocks us off that pedestal of being like a strong, dependable man, we feel weak, and then that brings vulnerability, that brings shame, you know? So it's kind of this like knock-on effect. That's kind of what that's my that's what I believe, and that's kind of what research backs up as well, I'd say.
And what do you think like is needed to persuade men, whether it's like subconsciously or overtly, to get involved in things that will help them grow and help them to kind of sort their stuff out? Because it is a crisis, isn't it? And so many men are killing themselves. I saw this like really sad reel. Well, there's so many reels of like men and their like last video of them before they ended up committing suicide. And it was an Australian reel of just all these boots from all these men that had killed themselves that year. Like everyone who was part of the charity was asked to bring their relatives' boots. And it was just this field full of men's boots and a photo next to them. And it kills me, seeing that kind of stuff. So what, how do we get men involved in talking or doing stuff that helps?
I think the language we use when we're talking about this, these kind of spaces and this stuff is really important. And that's with my retreats, the men's retreats we run, myself and the guy I run it with, Josh. He's a copywriter, and so he not that's not his only trade. That's one of the things he does. So he's very articulate with his wording, and that's what we're massive on, because you see a lot of stuff, and it's this is why I think I'm a fan of your work, because with the way you work with the way you talk about yoga. I mean, like you take away a lot of the kind of like nuance around it, which obviously everything has its nuance and has its place, but it's trying to be approachable, you know. It's trying to be how my role, my goal is to use my background as a professional sportsman, in this new kind of it's not even esoteric anymore, because I work in the performance space as well, but to how can we get these men involved, the average man who goes to the down to the pub and have a drink with his mates. Which is fine, but how can we also get him to entertain a bit more introspective work, you know, a bit more meditation, yoga, breath work? So I think we need to take the kind of woo-woo away from it. Not that I've got anything against woo-woo, to be fair. I like my dose every now and then. But yeah, it's the language we use. So I think like changing in terminology, to kind of entice them, because I feel as soon as they hear something, it seems a bit out there, like, no, nah, not for me. I know that for a fact. So it's just like, how can we create a language which is more accessible to men, if that makes sense?
Like completely. I think that's what we need to do with, like with yoga as well and anything. We just try and make it without degrading what it is. We change it slightly to get people involved. And it's far better you slightly water it down and people do it than you keep it in its purest form and all these people that benefit never get involved. I'd rather people get involved in 1% than 0%.
Totally agree.
That is my goal. And like, where do your men like come from? Like, I've seen you run lots of kind of successful men's wellness retreats. And I've always debated myself, shall I do something for men? My wife has been saying it for years. Lots of people have said it to me. And I've just thought, like, where would the men come from that want to do that with me? Like, unless I went to like a CrossFit gym and kind of got myself like undercover there for a year. I don't know like where I don't know, having a few little conversations between sets. I don't know where I get the men from. So where do you find the men come from that finally reach you? And have they all met you in person, or have some of them come blind just from what they see on social media?
Yeah, so it's been a slog to get to where it is now. You know, we're 4 or 5 years into it, 20 plus retreats, like the last 15 we've sold them out, you know. But the first two I lost money, and like just about broke even on new ones. And a big part of that is my Josh, who runs it with me. He was a massive part in helping it be a bit more like fiscally doable. But initially, so it started with a one day work with a one day workshop, and then it kind of built into retreats. So initially, I'd say it probably just came from my kind of social media, people who kind of knew about me as a rugby player. They see my transition into what I'm doing now and thought, oh, that looks quite different, quite interesting. And but also with that, I also got a lot of stick. Like, you can imagine what my teammates were calling me. I won't say it here. And like, yeah, like the look I'd get when I'd say it was a mental cheat, they'd be like, "Well, that's weird. Why is that? What's that about?" So I had to like go through that for a long time, and just picking up people where I can. I'd say the thing that really brought the people in and still brings the people in. I got fortunate enough. I not last year, the year before, 2023. We're in 25, aren't we? Yeah, we had some really good press. We had a journalist from The Guardian and a journalist from The Times in the same year, within like 4 months of each other. And there's a BBC Sport online article. But the other two articles were really good for us. They kind of like the journalists had a really good experience and documented it like super authentically. And yeah, it just got out there to the masses, and like people were starting to see and go, "Oh, this sounds like something I'd enjoy." And talking about wording, what I'll say at different times in the retreat, well, maybe at the start when I'm talking, when I'm addressing the guys, and like I just want to normalize men being able to just take some time. Not I want to normalize. I want to be a part of a movement that can normalize men taking time away from themselves to prioritize the physical and mental health, and like kind of stepping away from, "I need to go mag a luff for 4 days to blow off some steam." You know what I mean? Can we actually can we invest in ourselves to take 4 days, 3 4 days out to do this? Because I feel like as men, we find that really almost selfish. I know a lot of guys
Yeah, no,
feel
completely.
selfish, like they've got families, etc. So it's a big investment, but you can't pour from an empty cup, can you? So like it's taking that time to like to just to be there, like even in between the activities we do, the journaling, the reflections. A lot of men come who are maybe going through a divorce. They are in a pivotal point in their life where they have to make some big decisions, a lot's going on, and they're just coming just for that time for themselves. So that's what we're seeing, as well as like that's bringing in. We're seeing guys just coming, like, "I just need some time to myself to reconfigure, you know?" So, and that's what I want it to be. I don't want it, but I also don't want it to be, you have to come because shit's hit the fan, you know? I don't want it to
It's not
be,
crisis center.
exactly. It's not crisis center. We're not therapists, but I want it to be a preventative measure, you know? You're taking preventative measures to prioritize yourself and like, yeah, mitigate like burnout, etc.
You know,
So, yeah.
I think that selfish thing you mentioned is so important. Like, I think the role of men in society has changed. And like back in the day, and this isn't right, you know, the man would go to work, then go to the pub, then come back, go to bed, maybe watch TV, and that's it. And maybe, you know, maybe change your nappy here and there. And that's kind of what a man did. And they had all the lots of responsibility, you know, financially, etc. They were the head of the household. And again, there's lots wrong with that. But I think the kind of the modern conscious man, especially that modern dads, have evolved to want to be like a massive part of their kids' life, want to do the nappies, want to share childcare, but also wants to work, etc. And also has this kind of ingrained deep sense of like needing to look after and keep everyone safe and watch out for danger. And they're trying to do so much now that, yeah, as you say, to go away for a day would seem selfish. It seems like letting go of responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I think that crisis is bigger than ever because men have their role in society has changed, good, which is good, but perhaps their upbringing and maybe part of their nature hasn't caught up with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like you say, there's so many pros to like the new kind of like gender equality that we see. But with that, it's left a lot of men, especially younger men, in this kind of like limbo. Or not that they wanted to, like you say, go out, work, put the feet up until bedtime, the missus do everything. And just kind of like, for example, I after one of my workshops, it was actually, I spoke at an event. I had like a younger man, but he was about 21. He came up to me, and he just looked a bit lost, and we were just chatting, and he said, "I just don't know what to do." He said, I've got a partner, but I can hold the door open for her, and she has a go at me, and like I don't know what to do. How am I supposed to act?" So in that sense, I think we need We need I think we need like definite, not necessarily definitions, but what are the characteristics we're look will help. So what we try to do in the retreats, and it's an open conversation. I don't tell anyone what to do. Or Josh, we're just creating a space for kind of these conversations to happen. I'm trying to work it out myself. So we're trying to create a space where we can talk about what did a healthy with masculinity in a bit of, in it's a controversial topic. Like you say masculinity and it can be provocative for some people. But I feel we're very confused. We're very confused with what masculinity is. And it's like, well, what are the good qualities as a man should I be trying to embody? Should I be trying to portray to my family and those around me? So, and I personally feel like it's completely fine to hold the door open for your partner. And I
For
know.
anyone, that's a human thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'd hold the door open
exactly.
for you, and you don't need any help opening the door.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right. And yeah, and like, and still kind of, I think letting go of some of the old ways, but keeping hold of some of the strong traits of what it means to be like a compassionate and purposeful man, you know. And I feel like that's what's in the up in the yeah, there's a debate about that at the minute, because you're on your end of the spectrum, you've got your Andrew Tates of the world, who, and like, so younger men, because of these issues, are looking at these people. There's not too many positive role models out there, like, well, what I believe anyway. So yeah, it's kind of like, how do we salvage the kind of sinking ship that what people are trying to make out is masculinity? Because we need it, you know. It's a fundamental part of who we are, and we're inseparable from it. Which is like, well, what are the integral traits of masculinity, and how do we then work towards that? It's almost like we need, like, you know, like the Stoics had like the four virtues, you know. I feel like we need some virtues that we can work towards.
I think the issue with Andrew Tate, because I'm scared, because I'm a dad of two boys, and I'm scared, like, if my son is told that holding the door open is bad, that he's innately bad for being a man, then naturally he will go to the person who tells him he's okay and he's good, which is the assholes like Andrew Tate, who is an asshole. Okay, in for me, in every sense. Maybe there's some snippets of nice stuff. There's snippets of nice stuff that everyone has said, no matter in the past. But that's the issue, is there's no middle ground. If all the good stuff is bad, then the if there's only these people telling them they're good as men, then all of them are going to become like that. And that's my fear. And maybe it is that the positive role models aren't vocally in your face telling you how to be a man. Like, my role models, I've got some printed out here, actually. Not for this podcast, but, like, men that inspire me. So who have we got? We've got Terry Pratchett. Well, he's dead, so he's not, like, a role model anymore. Well, Albert Camus, okay? Well, author. This is no order. Naval Ravikant. So he's kind of good. So he's an angel investor that is actually trying to be a philosopher to modern life. I'm trying to think of people that are actually alive that are useful. Like, even in something like the UFC, like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, like, nicest human being in the world, but they're not in your face telling men how to live. And that, like, Keanu Reeves, for instance, again, nicest human being. And that, I think, is the issue, that the moderate men, the men that are actually living well, aren't in your face telling the young people how to live. And maybe that's what we need more of.
That's a really, you know, I've never actually thought about it like that. And like you said, we in on both sides, we have our discussions in private about this stuff, you know. Like we're not like broadcasting that. So yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, like those men we're speaking of, they're just doing, aren't they? They're embodying that, and like people, they're inspiring people in their own ways. But like you said, they're not putting out like dogmatic kind of like ways to be, etc. Where, and that doesn't get as much. It doesn't get as much attention, does it, as the former, you know, that we spoke about. But yeah, it's just kind of, for me, it's I see it as, so when we have a retreat, we have like 15 guys, and if we can make some sort of positive impact, and when I say we, I don't even mean us. We just create, as you know, I know you run retreats as well. We just create the container for what the people need, for some of the practices. Okay, you might want to try that, you might want to try this. But like, a lot of the free time in between is where a lot of the magic happens, the conversation that the guys are having, etc. And if we create the right container for them to have a positive experience and gain some clarity, maybe a bit more clarity on where the next step is, go back and like want to be a better best version of self for themselves, but also for the family. Then you're creating a ripple effect, aren't you? In the, like, it's not, you're not just helping one man; you're helping him be a better version to his family, and hoping that that kind of ripple effect goes on. So I think it's just for me, in my immediate in control, what can I do? How can I make a positive impact? And that's just what I'm focused on. And sometimes it feels like it's a bit of a hard slog. But when you get as you, I'm guessing you would have as well. But when you get those emails and like that I don't share, by the way, you probably would have saw like people like saying like you've like made a big impact in their life, etc. It's worth it, you know. And it's like, yeah, and this is like definitely, I feel that I'm on the right path here.
Nice.
So yeah, it's just turning up, isn't it? And just doing what you can do.
And maybe getting beyond the cringe, because like my view is always like so many people have said to me I should do more in the space and like vocally, and I always find it being like, oh, I don't want to be preachy and telling people how to live their life, etc. I find it a bit
I get
cringe
that.
when people, but maybe that's what like decent human beings need to do more of, be more vocal, even if it doesn't feed the algorithm as well. Let's come to your retreats now. Like men, when most people think of men's retreats, okay, I think people have the image of like running in circles, chanting, drums, images of like I've seen the, well, my background is boxing, like the worst, like sparring, like in a circle, screaming, crying. Is that all going on your retreats?
Absolutely not. I can't stand that. I really can't. That's definitely a trigger of of mine. You just unearthed it. Look, if they're getting results, with the men they're working with, like fair play. I don't discount anyone for doing it, but I just think it's all a bit lame, Adam, if I'm being honest. They all follow the warrior magician, lover king archetypes. They are on the retreat. I'm just like, be original. Like, do something else. But when I said to you, using a language and approachability, like, how is the average man who drinks for like 5-6 pints on a Friday gonna look at these men with one hand on 20 men with one hand on a man in the middle while he's crying his eyes out?
With a shame
Like,
and
how
with a
is,
shame and a feather in the middle.
yeah, exactly. Like, how is that gonna entice him? Like, it's not. And like, look, I'm trying not to diss it, because I when I first come into this world, but like I was pretty out there as well. I'm guessing you've been there. We've all been there, you know what I mean?
I've had like the long hair, the Marla beads, the harem pants
Exactly.
around East London.
Exactly. That's what I mean. We've all been there. So I'm not knocking it, but then you realize kind of there's a middle way, there's a middle path. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be too up there because you're not grounded, you know? But you don't want to be obviously too far the other way either. So it's a balance. We need to live this life. You need to pay your taxes. You know, like you need to be a balanced like man, and grounded. So no, to answer your question, we don't do any of that. Yeah, I see the obviously I know what you're talking about when you see like the boxing and stuff. I'm like, that's not necessary. Do you know,
I'd
it's
quite like
me.
that though. I feel like I would enjoy a bit of it for the
Yeah.
wrong reason, for completely the wrong reasons.
I know what you're saying, but like we just like do like normal challenge like make putting getting guys the fire circle is a big part of our retreat, and like having like 15 new guys sit there and have to talk in front of a group that he never met before, that's terrifying for a lot of them. So like you don't need to do that kind of stuff. Obviously we do challenging stuff, we do obviously we do jiu-jitsu, but not in like that kind of like the way they do. We just like we have a coach come in, we go through practices, obviously no general fitness, my pool training, surfing, just obviously we do the other like more introspective things as well, but we do like physically challenging stuff, but it just doesn't need to be like dramatized so much, you know?
I think that's a key word there. Like my view is, if it works for someone, wonderful, great. Do the thing that works for you, and there needs to be something for everyone. But I agree that for like the average bloke, that is too much. And I think, you know, it's much like, the yoga class that somehow kind of brings in lots of random cultural stuff from other places. So a yoga class that suddenly then it was shamanism, then there's crystals involved, then tarot cards, etc. Like, nothing wrong with that if that works for you. But some of these men's groups remind me of that. Like, taking the most dramatic or visually dramatic stuff from different disciplines and cultures and kind of merging it together. And I think the issue is the most profound long-term change that someone can experience isn't ever dramatic. It never looks cool. It's kind of the honest, as you say, real life integration that that has that effective change. And I've seen so many people that go on like yoga trainings in Goa for 3 weeks and they come back wearing white and with their beads. And then 3 weeks later, you know, they're just their normal self, or even worse, because they've got a sense of spiritual superiority. And again, that's a sweeping generalization. But I think we need long-term work. We need the normal stuff, or at least not everyone does. At least some people need that normal kind of conversations. And that's powerful. There's a TV show, actually. Maybe it's not the best example, called Loudermilk. You heard of it?
No.
So it's like a dark American comedy. One of the best things I've watched for you. I think it's on Netflix. And it's like an Alcohol Anonymous group. And it's just a group of the most random men. You know, like one of them's a con artist. One of them is just like a pervert and the like. But it's, again, it's that. It's kind of just the most extreme of normal men supporting each other. And it's just so heartening to see. And not everyone needs that kind of group of people, but I think most men need a group of people. Loudermilk, it's absolutely hilarious and fantastic. Yeah, it's the best show I've seen in years. Cool. Moving on from that. Sorry, having some water. Let's kind of have a little bit of a throwback into your transition to this from your previous life. So you were a professional rugby player, lots of teams, lots of trophies, etc. How did this kind of like self-reflection, the kind of the wellness world, the breath work, start to appear in your life? Was it afterwards? Was it as career was ending? Was it during? Or was it, because I know you're still vegan?
No.
You're not, but you were for a period, weren't you?
Yes.
And was it near that time when you were into veganism, wellness kind of came on board? Tell me about that transition.
It's a bit of a long story. Have you got I'll summarize. I'll break it down as quick as you can. And it's quite a funny journey for me to like be sat here in Newquay now, from like the north, like industrial northwest, where I was playing rugby, and well, I'm around the world as well. But so I'd say veganism came, and then that kind of put me in the spotlight. I think I was 25 at the time, 26. I was playing for the Leeds Rhinos, who were like up north. They're a pretty big team, one of the biggest teams in the north of England, and they're probably one of the world's well-known teams in England. So the reason I say that is because it's one of the only cities in the country where rugby is massive. Rugby league is massive, so it's kind of like you've kind of like people know you in Leeds. You know, it's not. But if you're in Wigan or you're in like another town in England, like it's not that big a deal. Do you know
you'd be,
I mean,
recognised on the street.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And the fact you're, what, 6'3", 6'4", helps as well.
Yeah, exactly. big ginger beard. They kind of got out through that, and obviously veganism at the time it was on the up, and obviously veganism, not like it's like say like it's this kind of a. Insidious organization, but the like kind of big brands in the plant-based space were looking for ambassadors. You know, they wanted kind of like athletes who were coming out like saying the vegan to kind of like help spearhead it and stuff like that. So a bit of a popularity came through that. And that kind of took me, that was giving me this persona away from the rugby field. Then I had my own song because for being a vegan by the fans and stuff like this. So that was going on. At the same time, I started to get into meditation, and I got into it out of necessity, just because I wouldn't say I was off the rails, but I was drinking far too much. And even as an athlete, so we'd play Friday, and then I'd go out Friday, Saturday probably, and then I just wake up because we wouldn't be in training till Monday sometimes. So I just wake up with the most crushing like anxiety, and obviously that'd be a fear, classic. But I had it really bad, and it kept happening. I knew it wasn't for me. I was like this. I remember thinking this isn't who I am, but I was like, well, I don't know who, but I don't know who I am, who's saying this, you know? If there's a voice saying this isn't who I am, who am I, and who's the one that can observe this kind of this behavior? And so I can't actually remember, but I heard about it. I was like, I'm gonna give it a go. So I started to meditate. And as you know, breath work and meditation, like, synonymous, you know, it comes hand in hand. So
Out of interest,
I
just to interrupt there, what kind of meditation did you get into initially?
No, it's a good question. I experimented with different types, obviously, like transcendental, Zen, which I still kind of do now. A bit. I like Zen,
That's my bias
but
as well.
obviously, yeah. I went between different, like, obviously fixed awareness, open awareness styles. I feel for me, fixed awareness meditation is a better one. I feel like if it's just open, like I think just allowing everything to come in and out, it for me, it's just not that great. Not in like a dark way. Oh, what's going to come in? I just get a bit too lost. So yeah. Anyway, to answer your question, so a bit of TD, a bit of Zen. I just kind of like worked with what works for me. I'm still now, like, 8 years later, I'm still working out what kind of meditation is best for me. But I just know I need to sit down like once, twice a day, and it's very. I don't need, obviously, I don't need to, but I like to because it's very good for me. So yeah, I started that process, and obviously then like you have these existential crises, don't you? Oh, what's the meaning of everything? You know, like we've all been there. And then. Those kind of internal things going on is so, like, I thought I was having a spiritual awakening at the time. It's hard to kind of then go on the rugby field and start and try, like, take people's heads off. So I started to have this like dilemma where I wasn't getting that motivated to play anymore. I was really struggling because I had this other stuff going on in my life, which was like obviously chalk and cheese from what I did on the rugby field. And my role on the rugby field was like the enforcer of the team. I had to kind of like be like the bad guy almost, who kind of like took care of their bad guy. You know, like, you know, so do you know, like in hockey when you see people like fight, obviously it wasn't as fingers that, but you'd have the, you know who their guy was, and you needed to get over the top of them early doors. So it just wasn't lining up, and my performance then started to suffer as a consequence. And I was only 29, like technically coming into my sorry, I would have been 28 at the time as this going on. I was technically coming into my prime. And at that time, I started to hear about the other side of breath work, which can actually enhance performance, obviously the oxygen advantage, that kind of stuff. So that really intrigued me. So I started to delve in that a bit more. And then essentially lockdown happened. So lockdown happened, and where everyone, all the other teams, kind of obviously they were just doing the thing. And then once it come, I bought a van. I bought a van. I went down to Cornwall, and I got kicked out of Cornwall because I wasn't allowed to travel. But I was being a bit rogue. And when the things got lifted a little bit and teams were allowed to start playing again, and players, my team went bust, who I was playing for, they went bust. So all my teammates went to other clubs. I was like, this is my chance. I was like, this is my chance to get out. So I thought, fuck it, I'm staying in Cornwall. So I stayed in the van. I was working as a surf coach for my friend down here who's got a surf school. I was
Hang on,
landscape guy.
rewind. How, at what point did you learn to surf? You're like Leeds, northern mining towns. Where, at what point did you learn how to surf, to be a surf coach?
So I did my training in Australia when I was younger.
Okay.
I lived in Australia playing rugby. So I
Okay.
did it all over there. I started surfing over there, and then in the off seasons, I'd go to kind of like Central America, you know, the whole that surf scene over there. So I was doing that. So I was a keen surfer, not very good, but keen. And so yeah, that's how that happened. So I started. I was surf coaching. I was landscape gardening, because I just stopped, and I was obviously I needed to kind of live. So I was like, it was funny, because I'd take people out, and if they were from Yorkshire, they knew who it was. So they'd be like, "Are you like someone who played for the Leeds Rhinos?" I was just like, "Nope, not me." and they were just laughing. So it was really funny, but I had such a sense of freedom with that. I was living in a van, I was living on a field, having fires every night. It was the most freeing I've ever felt. But then I was like, all right, well, I need some sort of money. I'm not ready. Things aren't, the retreats aren't where they want to be. I didn't even know what to do with the retreats yet. And the breath work isn't where it needs to be. I was qualified, but I hadn't had any experience or anything like this. So I needed a few more years. So I went to France with rugby. I was playing in France whilst I was doing more training. I was developing the retreats and stuff. And then, yeah, I came back, and I was able to kind of start it off. So in this process of me stepping down from obviously like international rugby, I trying to build everything simultaneously. And I didn't retire when things were ready. I retired early because I was like, well, I need to retire and put my time into this, even though there was no money coming in or anything like that. I needed to take like a risk, you know, a gamble. And that's what I did. That's what I did essentially. And like now, I mean, it's just about like, where I want it to be, you know. And it's I'm still got ambition going further, and there's lots of stuff to do. But yeah, it's taken years to kind of get to a place where I'm kind of comfortable, you know. Like opportunities are coming now, thankfully. But yeah, it took like to walk away from like, obviously, high-paying rugby salary and stuff like that. So yeah, it's quite obviously I've skipped over quite a few things there, but it was quite a funny process. And I just wanted to come to Cornwall. I was like, I love Cornwall. I want to be here. So I thought, I'm just going to come to Cornwall, and I'm going to develop a life which allows me to stay in Cornwall, if that makes sense. Yeah. So yeah, and I've built everything else around that.
At what point did the transition happen? Because obviously, initially, you're doing it all. Like in a completely non-selfish way, you're doing it for you. You're kind of investigating this new way of living, etc.
Yeah.
And then at what point did you think, actually, I can have a greater effect on the world, I'm going to help other people? And then I guess, what does that look like now? Like, what do you want? What effect on the world would you want to have? Like, what would be the ultimate thing you're going towards?
It's a good question. So the starting with the transition, it got to a point where, so after the France, Cornwall started a professional rugby league team. So I thought, this is perfect. This gives me the chance to go there. I was coaching. I was like player coach. Obviously get like an okay salary. But I told them, I said, I've got retreats this year, here. And that would, they were fine with it. So if I was like playing top level, that wouldn't have been okay. You can't do that. They tell you to shut up or rip your contract up. So the transition came probably like fully into this space, I'd say 2022, and like, because it was, I realized the retreats were kind of going well. I thought, okay, well, this is me now. It's time to kind of fully step into this. And the second part of your question, I think like I said before, what we're trying to do with both sides. Obviously, I've got other little things going on, but both sides is the retreat that's my passion. That's my passion project. Everything I'm doing, I'm passionate about. But this is like where I can feel like I can really make a difference in the world. And it is creating kind of like, because we've got our big community of men now. Obviously, after the retreats, we put on like reoccurring events, reoccurring retreats, just for people who've been on before. We have like, obviously free stuff as well, day like meetups, like we got like over 100 guys in the group. And I see if we've got like over 100 guys who are bought in to kind of promoting positive masculinity in their own communities, and being trying to be like kind of like beacons of what it looks like to be a positive, like integral, compassionate man, and what it looks like. So I'm going on a bit, but yeah, if we if I could be a part of something which kind of helps install new principles, or well, not new because it's the same, it's always been there, but reawaken the real integral definitions and characteristics of masculinity in men. So I like the so we they can be the best versions for themselves and their family. I'm not talking about the old fashioned 50s husband who backhanded the wife. You know what I mean? I'm talking about like being strong, but also being compassionate. Being vulnerable, but also be like, but having firm boundaries and not taking any shit. You know what I mean? So it's like it's the balance of both, isn't it? Knowing how to soften into the feminine when they need to integrate that into the life. So yeah, that's what I want to say. Me, I don't want people. I don't even care if it's me as Anthony. It's just like the whole collective, you know.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on how physicality ties into manliness? Like an ability to, where did I say it? It was something that a former guest, you might know, Mark Walsh, shared, who does a lot about kind of embodiment. And it was a meme that he shared. And it's like, oh no, I'm a peaceful man. I wouldn't ever hurt anyone. But I mean, I'm butchering this, but the idea is you can't call yourself a peaceful man and that you wouldn't hurt anyone if actually you couldn't hurt anyone because you're weak and you're not strong. And you need to be able to protect the people that mean something to you. And you can only say that you are peaceful and in control if you're actually strong in a sense. I've completely butchered that, but hopefully you get a sense of what I'm trying to say.
No, I understand. I think that's quite Jordan Peterson-esque, I think.
Maybe that's where it came from initially.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, obviously you can't be like a peaceful man if that's your only choice. That's just like who you are. But obviously, if you're a cat, Jordan Peterson talks about if you are a dangerous man, but you act in a peaceful way, then you're really peaceful because you have the capacity to be dangerous, but you choose to be peaceful. Mm. You know, so that's, I'm not saying I disagree or agree with that. I'm just saying that's kind of. But
I just do a comparison? I said this to my wife the other day. It's completely unrelated. Well, it is though. It's a little bit similar concept. And someone saying like, I'm a 40-year-old man. I would never cheat on my wife. And it's like, well, is anyone asking you? Are loads of women flirting with you that you're like in control over and you're saying no, and you're batting them away?
Yeah.
But yeah, carry on, sorry.
Yeah. Yes, overwhelming temptation.
Yeah.
So for me, I think it's important. I think it's important, but not just for like, just for your general health to be physically strong. It's super important. But when I mentioned strength, I don't just mean like of the physical. I mean like strength of character, strength of will. You know what I mean? The ability to kind of set boundaries and kind of not follow the crowd and stay true to what you want to do. That's strength for me. So when I say strength, I don't always mean the physical. But I'm a massive component. As well as a breathwork, I'm a strength coach. I'm a massive like advocate for general like strength and like keep. Like you say, you did boxing, I did jiu-jitsu. I feel like to be able to kind of like look after yourself and take care of yourself is like super, super important. Like competent, to feel competent. Like I think we have three kind of like needs and like, well, more, but I think what I've read in psychology, well, being competent, the feeling of competency is massive for our like sense of well-being and like an overall mental health. So knowing that you're competent is, it's a really important thing.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's key. I remember a stage in my life, you know, where I'd been a boxer. I was a heavyweight boxer. So I was boxing at like 100 plus kilograms, which I guess is technically super heavyweight back in the day. And then I got really into yoga teaching. And, you know, I was doing yoga and boxing for a long time together. But when I started teaching full time and teaching like 26 classes of the week, something had to go. And that was a lot of the boxing and like strength work. And I became small. I ended up being like 78 kilos at one point. And I remember like walking around cities teaching that I was unfamiliar with at nighttime, like after teaching a workshop, and feeling that like if something went down, I couldn't do anything about it. And that was actually really a horrible feeling. I'm not saying I've now got really big and strong again. I've got bigger, certainly. I'm about 100 kilograms again, but not the same muscle mass that I used to have. But there is something to that, that I think it's so nice to feel that you can both defend yourself, look after yourself, but then also when you have people dependent on you, that you can look after them now. And that is key for me. And I've got two little boys and we're traveling with them. I want to make sure like I can keep them safe. But we've done this before we go down that route too much. There's lots of other stuff that you are doing. And yeah, I guess we've got limited time, so you can take your pick. Do you want to go deep into the pool stuff or deep into the charitable foundation you're trying to set up? You can do both. We can do both. Your choice.
We can chat about the pool stuff if you like. Mm. Yeah. So
pool stuff wise, like when people see that, when I first saw it, I think from Richie, when I first saw that kind of stuff, I just imagined that photo of Muhammad Ali, that like of him in a pool holding weights, and the story behind it was he lied to the reporter in a very Muhammad Ali way and said, "This is how I train for resistance. I'm in a pool and I do boxing with weights in the pool." And he was taking the mic. And that's where my mind goes initially. Now, I haven't tried it. I've seen you guys do it in person at Pelagoni. Shout out to the Pelagoni Post Week. But what is the idea behind it? What's the idea behind like doing weighted-based stuff in pools? And you can maybe just explain a little bit what it actually is.
Yeah, for sure. And like when I first, so obviously, I'm strength and conditioning like background as well. So when I first saw it, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like with weights, you're trying to acquire the right stimulus, you know, and you need to have the right resistance, force, etc. Applied to. So like, well, that doesn't make sense because the pool is not going to allow you to achieve the stimulus. So I was just thinking from like a sports science kind of brain. So then you scratch the surface and you feel, oh, actually it's not about the weights. The weights are just a means to keep you in the water. So obviously you have to complete a task, whatever it may be. Say you got to go, you're doing something poolside, which is going to elevate your heart rate. And then you're going to go into an apnea. So you're going to do a dumbbell walk. So obviously you've probably seen where I do it in the deep pool. So it's a lot different from probably where you see me and Richie doing it. It's a different animal. A lot more stuff you can do. And just the depth kind of brings a different psychological element to it. But anyway, so you do dumbbell carry into maybe dumbbell, some squat jumps, and then you walk back. So in that movement, the weights are only there to keep you underwater, to allow you to do that. The weights aren't applying any other stimulus. So the stimulus that we're looking for is the stress response, essentially. And what Deep End Fitness, who I work for now, I'm working on expanding in England and Europe. It's a safe container to allow you to see how you respond in a stressful situation. In these confines, allow you to witness the internal narrative, the physiological response, and then work with it. And then you come back up. Well, because you're not under for that long, but then you come back up. You obviously then work on, obviously breath work's a big part of it. You work on regulating yourself, bringing yourself down. So what you're doing is you're teaching people to access this this part of your nervous system, the sympathetic part of your nervous system. But there's different branches to that, as you'll be aware. Everyone talks about like restoration, parasympathetic. That's all great. We need that. But you also need the sympathetic nervous system, or you're not getting out of bed in the morning. But also when you're in that higher state of sympathetic arousal, you've got two responses. You've got a threat response, and you've got a challenge response. And the thing that dictates which way you go is your internal dialogue and the appraisal of the stressor. And that's unconscious. That you don't stop and think, do I have the resources to meet demand? You don't. You automatically make that decision. Your nervous system does. So if there's a challenge presenting to you, say it's an actual real life challenge, obviously, as you know, thoughts can elicit the same response, but say it's a real life challenge and something happens and shit's about to hit the fan. The difference between you thinking, all right, I've got, I can do this. I'm going to respond better. I'm going to respond more adaptive, more problem solving. I'm going to get this done, opposed to being more withdrawn and dissociative, is like how well you believe your resources are matched to deal with the situation. So if you believe you've got the means to meet it, you will respond better. But again, this needs to be trained. This isn't something that just happens. But it can happen the obviously more negative way. So we're trying to allow people to access this challenge response to the nervous system and then be able to tap into the parasympathetic as quick as they can. So they're regulated, obviously they're back to that recovery state. So if I had to kind of sum it up, it's stress inoculation training essentially, and you're teaching people how to utilize stress. So we all see stress as a bad thing. Well, obviously we'd be blobs without it. We wouldn't have evolved to humans. So it's like, how do we utilize stress as an awareness? As a resource. And that is what we're trying to do. Obviously, you've got all the other stuff. You've got the CO2 tolerance training, etc., which you'll be aware of. That's obviously a big part of it as well. Obviously, teaching basic breath work, basic movements, the movement patterns. So you kind of combine it all together. Teaching yourself how to use that top-down control over kind of what's going on in the body. So if I had to kind of sum up in a few minutes, I'd say that's the meat and bones of it.
Is it similar to the concept of parts of it, like flow state, where your ability to deal with something meets the challenge, and is that sweet spot where it just about meets the challenge that's faced? Is that kind of what's going on at times?
We don't say you're going to access flow state necessarily, but what you just said is obviously correct. Yeah, one of the definitions of flow, isn't it, is of where your skill set matches what it is you're doing, and even if you believe it's a little bit out of your depth, that kind of potential for growth and possibility allows that flow, doesn't it? So yeah, it's similar. And obviously, if you are under the water and you're tapped in, you're focused, you've got the right mindset to complete this drill, you are pretty much in flow, I suppose, because everything's still, everything's quiet, and you're just acting, you know, you're just in a rational way.
Well, I love the sound of that. It reminds me, maybe it's a bad comparison, of those cave divers that are in a very highly stressful situation. I don't know if you see that documentary of the ones that saved those boys from the cave, and that was a one time that I think it's National Geographic, so it's on Disney, maybe. But it's you know, everyone is trying to rescue those boys from the cave in Thailand or like, and these like what would you appear to be like very geeky, slight English men came along and rescued them like they were heroes, and they were like the most experienced cave divers in the world, and all of them had experienced bullying as children. And all of them found like that darkness, that close off, where they were just with the challenge to be the most peaceful place in the world. Really, really interesting. But let's do some quick fires now. Let's do a few little quick fires. Right, so you coach a lot of elite performers, Olympic athletes, FTSE 100 executives. If you could go back and coach yourself at your maybe like 23 years old, what are the tools that you would give yourself, in short?
Wow, great question. Patience, definitely. Don't rush. I don't need to rush to be where I'm always going to get where I want to be, exactly where I want to be. Not care so much about what people think. I used to really care about how people perceive me. So obviously you need to care a bit, or we'd be sociopaths if we didn't have no care what people thought. But like not let that affect me. Just chill out, mate. Chill the fuck out.
Now, what misconceptions do you think people have of you, like when they see you, or just see you briefly on social media?
Like right now?
Yeah, if they just saw you now, yeah.
Misconception. Good question. I never thought about that.
That's quite good. That's quite a good mental sign that you don't really think about what people think of you, which is it's quite good that you haven't had that reflection.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I thought I'd put it in your head now.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to skip on that. But
that is a sign of a well-adjusted human being. How do you decide what's worth your time? How do you decide what is worth your time? Like, you've got so many projects going on. I'm sure so many people trying to pull you in different directions. And that will only get worse, you know, as your notoriety expands. Like, how do you decide what's actually worth your time?
Yeah. Again, it's going to sound really cliche, but obviously like just we're guiding from like me intuition and like my heart. So I was never really good at kind of listening to my gut when I was younger. I never really understood what that meant. I didn't really have my interoceptive relationship with my internal environment wasn't the best. So I kind of go off what excites me, and but also where is the impact? You know what I mean? Obviously, I've got to do stuff for money as well, but also it's like, how much of a positive impact can I have? I'm not going to lie and say that makes all my decisions, because it doesn't. Obviously, money is a part of it, but like money only gets me so far. I'm not. Otherwise, I'd live in London. Do you know what I mean? I'd be. And then no disrespect to people who live in London. I'd make a lot more money living in London. Do you know what I mean?
And then then spend a lot more money.
Yes, exactly.
You wouldn't have your big echoey lounge.
Yes, definitely not. Just I'm guided by excitement and the potential of impact. That's what guides me.
Nice. And you seem to be someone that's constantly acquiring new skills and maybe exploring new habits. Is there anything you're trying to like integrate into your life at the moment or learn about at the moment on the side?
I want to learn more languages.
Oh really? Which one? One would be your go-to?
I want to play guitar as well, but language, I would have said probably, I used to live in France, so I learned a bit of French, but I think I've got a bit of work coming up over the next year or so in Italy. So I think I'm going to learn a bit of Italian this year. So away from, for example, I'm certifying people this weekend to become deep end fitness instructors. And that's the first time I've been in that certification role as obviously the assessor, etc. So that's taken up a lot of my headspace at the minute in terms of being as prepared as I can for this training weekend and stuff. So that's like a big kind of practical, like academic, not to say academic, but you know what I mean, like theory style training. But yeah, on the other side, just more like light-hearted, gentle stuff is like learn guitar and maybe learn Italian.
Nice. I always find that I dated an Italian for years and I tried to learn Italian, but then every time I'd go there, it was just far easier for people to speak to me in English. And even all the young people, they were just like, they wouldn't even, but they said, oh yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And just like, I want to carry on. But I guess it's
just,
if you go to like rural places, it's wonderful. Now, where can people find you? What you got going on?
So you can find me on my Instagram is Malali, my name. 91 line 91. My website is www.antimalali.com.
It looks nice. Yeah, it looks slick. I remember when you launched it. It looks a good looking website.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Yeah, I've got a good friend who's a great graphic designer, so it was very helpful. But yeah, they're the two main places you'll find me.
And anything like upcoming that people can kind of join you at?
Yeah, I've got there's a pretty nice hotel that I work with in Cornwall called the Scarlet Hotel. We've got some kind of like day stuff coming up soon, day workshops. So I think you'll be able to find it on the Scarlet Scarlet website. But obviously you've got the pool training sessions, which are like, you can find pool training sessions in Newquay, soon to be Plymouth as well. And we are gonna come into London. So if you want to get involved, hopefully next month, I might be there to run a demo session. So get in, it's a 3.7 meter deep pool. So yeah, you can get yourself involved.
As a side note, how keen are companies who own pools to let you bring weights into their pool? Is that ever an obstacle like that requires like heavy persuasion?
That's the biggest obstacle. that is the obstacle. No, not necessarily the weights, but just kind of what it is we're doing. They see it and they don't understand it. They don't realize it's kind of like very physiologically informed. There's like shitloads of safety protocol. But they just like, oh, I don't know if I want to be a part of that. But It's growing here, you know, and it's going to grow into London. And I feel like once it's in a bit more of like the psyche of the consciousness, I feel like they'll be more receptive to let us do it. But right now, yeah, that is our main roadblock.
I wonder, just as a side note, like in terms of space, like using like movie studio pools. Like I remember, there was one in Bulgaria that I worked with, not the pool, but it was a studio that had a big pool used for filming. And I wonder if they'd be up for it. Like small studios that have like a deep pool for filming. I'm sure because they're used to heavy gear.
If you have any contacts,
I'll send you some Bulgarian contacts later. Right, we'll call it a day on the recording. Thank you so much for joining.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Honestly unbalanced.